increasing use of genetically modified crops, the spread of corporate agricultural practices, and the ongoing destruction of rainforests.
And global warming?
Sure. If the planet continues to warm, some, if not many, plant species may not be able to adapt. The ability to save seeds for hundreds, possibly thousands, of years may allow future generations to revive plants that would have otherwise been lost forever, and to restore environments that have been damaged or destroyed.
This moment of science comes from Indiana University.
Today's program was prepared by Michelle Ross, with help from Roger Hangarter in biology. For A Moment of Science, I'm Yael Cassander.
And I'm Don Glass.
WILL programs are made possible by Bevere Cafe, offering continental breakfast from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m., lunches from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m., Monday through Friday, and catering. Bevere Cafe is student-operated and newly remodeled. Second floor of Bevere Hall, corner of Gregory and Goodwin, Urbana.
It's 2:41 in sports this afternoon. The U.S. squad for men's basketball at the Olympics is set. The squad, which was announced today in Chicago, is led by LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, and Dwayne Wade. The 2008 U.S. team is out to improve on the dismal showing by the American team of 4 years ago, which finished with the bronze. Indiana coach Tom Crean has the commitment of another basketball recruit for next season. 6'5" guard Malik Story says he will attend Indiana this fall. Story had originally committed to Southern Cal. The opening game in the College Baseball World Series is tonight in Omaha, Nebraska, with Fresno State facing Georgia. This marks the first time two schools with the same nickname are playing for the championship. That nickname, by the way, the Bulldogs. On another day of interleague play, there is one National League game contest tonight. That game is taking place in Atlanta as the Braves face Milwaukee. The Chicago White Sox have the day off today to recuperate from being swept by the Chicago Cubs. The St. Louis Cardinals will be back in action tomorrow when they continue a 9-game road trip with a 3-game stop in Detroit to face the Tigers. And the Cubs are off today before playing host to Baltimore tomorrow. That's sports.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Village in Urbana, the same square with a new angle, now with shops, offices, activity, and dining facilities, including Pretty Nails and Mr. John's School of Cosmetology.
1,500 meters, that's the metric mile. It's one of the glamour events in track and field. The last time an American won an Olympic medal in the 1,500 was 40 years ago. The last time an American won a gold in the event was 100 years ago. Bernard Laggett could change that. NPR's Ted Robbins reports.
It's probably safe to say that 4 years ago in Athens, most viewers were not rooting for the Kenyan runner Bernard Laggett.
Here's the final lap. Hisham El Garouj trying finally to win that Olympic gold medal, and he has the lead over Laggett.
Moroccan Hisham El Garouj was the sentimental favorite. Two Olympics earlier, the world record holder had tripped and fallen. Then 4 years later, he was narrowly edged out. By 2004, El Garouj was past his prime and running on guts. As NBC called the end of the race, Laggett pulled ahead with 50 meters to go. El Garouj beat Laggett by 0.012 of a second. Bernard Laggett says he still thinks about that race a lot, winning the silver instead of the gold. It might have made him bitter, but it didn't.
He had to dig really deep, deep. You know, he got something from his heart that told him, you will win, Hisham El Garouj. Just give one more shot.
Now it's time for Laggett's shot. Hisham El Garouj has retired from racing, and Bernard Laggett no longer runs for Kenya. In 2004, he became an American citizen.
I just wanted to raise my family here, live here, work here, and, you know, just be one of the American people.
It's not unusual for elite African runners to switch citizenship. A number of them are running for Bahrain and Qatar in exchange for monthly salaries. For Bernard Laggett, his friends call him Kip, American citizenship offered better training facilities, a higher profile for endorsements, and a safe environment.
I love this country. I've stayed here for a long time, you know, since my college times in Washington State.
Laggett now lives in Tucson with his wife and 2-year-old son. I caught up with him at the University of Arizona track stadium as he warmed up in the infield while kids ran around him in a summer parks and rec meet. Here he can run and barbecue outdoors year-round.
I am a meat eater. I love eating a lot of meat, you know, barbecuing about four times a week. So those are very important for me. I love it.
His wife Gladys is a registered dietitian, so Legat quickly adds he also eats a lot of vegetables and carbs. His slender 5'8 body needs the fuel. Here's his training schedule.
Monday to Saturday.
On the seventh day, he barbecues. During the week, he alternates short workouts with long, hard with easy. What's hard for a Kip Legat?
You know, running at an average of 4:59, 4:58, a little under 5 minutes per mile for 4 miles straight.
Followed by an easy 5-mile run in the afternoon. What's easy? 6-minute miles. On Saturdays, he runs a half marathon on roads in the foothills above Tucson. It can be a grind until he comes home.
You know, opening the door changes everything because of my son's voice saying, "Daddy won," you know, and it is training, so it's really cool.
It's a suburban life. His neighbors are throwing a block party to see him off to the Olympic trials and, barring something unforeseen, Beijing. Kip Legat says he runs because he loves it, but ask him what gives him the most pleasure, and his answer comes quickly.
You know what? Winning.
He won the 1,500 meters in last year's World Championships. He also won the 5,000 meters, a rare double in the middle distance races. In the Olympics, it's only been done twice, in 1924 and 4 years ago by Hisham El-Garouj. Ted Robbins, NPR News.
Oil markets are up again today despite Saudi comments that Saudi Arabia may boost production. The hope is that a boost in supplies will lower the price of oil and gas. Drivers are now paying an average of $4.10 per gallon for self-serve regular. More from NPR's Kurt Nickisch.
There's movement on both sides of the supply-demand curve. The world's largest oil producer, Saudi Arabia, is promising to boost production modestly. At Aileron Trading, Phil Flynn says more supply should bring prices down.
Obviously, more oil is what the market's asking for. It's going to help. It could bring prices down maybe a nickel or dime at the pump.
And declining demand may bring prices down further. A Massachusetts energy forecasting firm expects Americans will use less gasoline this year than they did last year. Cambridge Energy Research Associates says people are driving less and are starting to look for more fuel-efficient cars. But at a gas station just around the corner from that firm, drivers were more deflated than elated.
I'm not jumping for joy.
Liz Resnick says a few cents of price relief doesn't bring the cost of gas close to where it was.
I'm just trying to get the gas light to go off, and it used to take $5 to do that, and now it takes $20. Prices need to go down a lot.
To hope for a lot is probably too much. Consumers will get a better sense of the long-term outlook when the Department of Energy releases its annual forecast this week. Kurt Nickisch, NPR News, Boston.
There's a hot product in the makeup aisles of many stores. Sales of mineral makeup have doubled in the last year alone. Companies who make it claim it's natural because it's made from ground-up minerals. Kelly Wilkinson reports.
To learn more about mineral makeup, I shimmied around makeup companies and dermatologists. Then I went straight to the source. I asked geologist Leslie Gordon with the United States Geological Survey, what's in this stuff?
Dirt. You know, like a geologist might get insulted if you call it dirt, but one man's mineral is another man's dirt.
And another company's pay dirt. We'll get to that in a minute. In the meantime, I'm sitting with Gordon in a conference room at the USGS. They usually deal with heavy-duty science topics like climate change and earthquakes. Today, Gordon explains how some of the most common minerals in mineral makeup, like the colorful iron oxides family, for example, actually become foundations and blushes. She takes a hunk of rock that looks like petrified Play-Doh, picks out some green malachite, and starts crunching it up in a mortar and pestle.
And then these are pure mineral pigments.
When she's done, it looks like loose green eyeshadow. But not all mineral makeup is just minerals. The term isn't regulated, so mineral makeup can include other ingredients. It depends on the brand.
there isn't any truth in advertising rule that the FDA requires.
Dr. Carolyn Jacob is director of Chicago Cosmetic Surgery and Dermatology. She says since the FDA doesn't require companies to back up their marketing claims with hard science, makeup choice simply comes down to personal preference. But what about, in her professional opinion, that claim that you can sleep in some of this makeup?
I don't understand why anyone would want to sleep in makeup. That's just the strangest concept. It astounds me when I talk to people who don't wash their face at night. That's kind of me like not brushing your teeth.
Bare Essentials is the modern-day pioneer of mineral makeup. The ingredient list for their powdered makeup does show only mineral ingredients, and that's striking a chord with women. Last year, their sales were up by almost a third to $150 million. At a softly lit makeup counter in a posh San Francisco mall, Bare Essentials lead makeup artist Christina Choi buffs mineral foundation onto my face.
So you basically put a small amount of the minerals in there, tap off the excess, and then you start buffing onto the skin.
As she stands amid hundreds of small pots of powdered foundation and glittery eyeshadows, she says the frenzy of companies now offering mineral makeup is kind of flattering.
We've been doing mineral makeup for 30 years now, so it's not a fad for us. You know, with other cosmetic lines, we take it as a compliment in a way because they're kind of catching on to what we're doing so well at.
Now, everyone from fancy department store brands to drugstore staples like Maybelline and Revlon offer some version of mineral makeup. Back at the USGS, geologist Leslie Gordon thumbs through a glut of glossy advertising that makes minerals sound downright sexy. But as is often the case in cosmetics and fashion, Gordon says there's nothing really new here.
We're taking something that's been used for centuries or millennia, in fact, and marketing it as if it's brand new.
After all, mineral makeup worked for the original smoky-eyed diva, Cleopatra. For NPR News, I'm Kelly Wilkinson in San Francisco.
It's 2:52. There's been a rush to the courthouse in California for gay couples who wish to marry. But commentator Amy Gott is thinking of what happens next. And when she thinks of the gay divorce, she's not thinking of the 1934 film classic with Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire. Here's this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
They're already calling it California's new summer of love. Last week, California began issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples, prodded by a state Supreme Court ruling that gays and lesbians have the right to marry under the state's constitution. Voters will decide in November whether to amend that constitution to overturn the ruling. But for now, at least, the new California gold rush for platinum wedding bans is on, and the applicants are coming not only from Palm Springs and Palo Alto, but from places like Peoria and Paducah. Massachusetts led the way with same-sex marriage in 2003 after a court ruling there. But a quirk in Massachusetts law effectively limited same-sex marriage to state residents. That meant, as a practical matter, however much the issue was hotly debated on talk radio and in Congress, that same-sex marriage remained basically confined to Massachusetts. Not so with California. The state has no similar limitation and no residency requirement to marry. So same-sex couples from around the country are free to plan a holiday in sunny California, squeeze in a walk up the aisle, and head home in wedded bliss. And California intends to make them feel welcome. The New York Times reports that the state's recession-wracked tourism industry is eagerly courting out-of-state lovebirds with offers of wedding holidays, including a $30,000 Elizabeth Taylor package at one Palm Springs resort. A new UCLA study estimates that 68,000 out-of-state couples are likely to marry in California over the next 3 years, assuming state voters don't close the window in the fall. But what happens when these couples return home and the summer of love turns into the winter of their discontent? Ironically, same-sex marriages, assailed by opponents for allegedly weakening the institution of marriage, may turn out to be the strongest and most durable of all. Marriage has always been easier said than done in, and it's even more so here. Same-sex couples from outside California may find that divorce is well nigh impossible. Most states have enacted laws or state constitutional amendments limiting marriage to opposite-sex couples, and so are likely to refuse to recognize California same-sex marriages. That means that same-sex couples lawfully married in California will be treated as if single once they get home. That legal cold shoulder is likely to extend to divorce if the marriage formed out west heads south. Last December, for example, the Rhode Island Supreme Court ruled that a lesbian couple married in neighboring Massachusetts couldn't get divorced in Rhode Island because that state didn't recognize them as being married. Unable to divorce.